You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Kia ora. My name is Jamie Hanton, and I'm the director of the Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Based in central Christchurch since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to achieve a higher level of professional and creative development and encourage a greater acknowledgement, understanding, and value of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate. Welcome to Art Not Science, joined today by Luke Shaw, Phoebe Hinchliffe, Daniel Shasky, and Michelle Wang, and me, Jamie Hanton. And we're going to talk about Sympathetic Resonance and Domino Domino, the two exhibitions that the three artists here contributed to over the course of 2019 and 2020. Just some context around Sympathetic Resonance. It occurred in the pattern of Physics Room exhibitions where we've been partnering with art galleries around the South Island. So we were invited by curator of the Suta Gallery, Sarah McClintock, to contribute a response to the Suta Contemporary Art Project, which in 2019 and 2020 was Sympathetic Resonance, which had as a provocation the rejection of time and space as a limitation on producing and creating. So the Physics Room approached Luke, Phoebe and Daniel to put something together. And I think at the start of the conversation was how that response would be to a show that was kind of already in the throes of being realized, and our contribution was going to be separate but also together with the rest of the exhibition. And there were questions around how each of the artists would contribute. Would it be a collaborative response or would it be individual responses? So I kind of just wanted to throw it out to you all to kind of talk us through those initial conversations around Sympathetic Resonance and how the response to that was developed.
I guess to begin with, we were thinking about how all of our practices are quite similar, but engaging in different ideas. And so we were thinking about whether or not we could make that collaborative or whether or not we needed to split out the works. I think kind of ended up being more of a time thing with everyone's schedules around the time that we ended up deciding to split them out but make them interconnected in a way of one work responding to another, which more or less happened. I mean, definitely for my work, tried to incorporate both Luke and Phoebe into it by inviting them to contribute pages to my publication system.
Because I think the thing was, the reason we chose the three of you was, like you say, Daniel, that you have similar practices kind of unified by a desire to capture or document or record. So it kind of fit into the premise of Sympathetic Resonance. And I know that we discussed what a feedback loop might look like as well in the context of that. So your work went first. Maybe you could just describe in really concrete terms what the work is.
So my work was a publication, which I was interested in trying to create a publication that spanned time and space during the show. So I developed the title for it, and then I developed the first page, which was a manifesto, which was then presented in the space on the face of a structure, which was in thinking around the ideas of kiosks as distribution spaces, but also it was shaped like a black monolith, kind of taking cues from Kubrick's 2001. And the idea of the whole publication was that it was going to develop throughout the show, so I didn't know what the endpoint was going to be. So each page was going to be influenced by the previous page, and I really was interested in the idea that it's something that was reflective of my learning process through the show as well. Mm-hmm. Like I liked that I could experiment with different types of content. So some of the pages engage with research projects. Some of them are based on my writing practice. Some of them I interview the artists and then kind of invited, like I said, with people to put their work into certain pages as well. Each page was designed so that it could be folded up and taken away. And so there was so many printed of each as we went through. I kind of set them up as I finished them.
Cool. And Luke, you kind of came in second to
the loop. Can you explain? Can you describe your work and what was in the suture and when it came in?
Well, I can't remember exactly when it came in, but it was a pre-recorded sound work which looped, and it was. I was thinking about the suture is quite distinct, where it has two gallery spaces and the old kind of like hall, mm-hmm. And a newer add-on. And I was just considering that relationship and wanting to create a feedback loop between those two spaces, mm-hmm. considering how people interact and how also the show worked across those two spaces. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's kind of it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And Phoebe, you came in last with your work. I was just wondering if you could talk us through Mush Zone.
Yeah. I think I was thinking about how the title of Sympathetic Resonance talks about two of the same tuning forks, and then I was thinking about Christchurch and Nelson as kind of point A and B and what there is in between that can be kind of expanded upon. And I remember on the drive up looking at the ball markers that were on the power lines and thinking, oh, how funny that there are just these balls floating. Yeah, and then I started thinking about radio waves, and not that they're really related because one's power and one's another form of communication, but I thought that was kind of relevant too in terms of communication and feedback, and also kind of how there could be a miscommunication. And that, I think that's where the title Mush Zone comes in, because it is a term with radio waves. There's ground waves and sky waves. I mean, there's the same frequency of one of each, and they meet, they can interfere and create like a white noise or a distortion. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where the title of it comes from. And I remember when I was driving up there to do some filming, I was listening to Radiohead, funnily enough, and I was listening to one of their songs, and speaking of miscommunication, I misheard the lyrics, and I was like, how weird that he says jump into the radio, like what a funny coincidence. But he actually says jump into the river, which is, you know, I guess that's maybe a coincidence too because of the Maluia, but that's what influenced the kind of hole between two people that went into Dan's work. So yeah, it kind of all feeds into itself and then gets spat out the other side.
So was your contribution to System to System, Dan's publishing work, was that, how do you consider that in relation to your work? Was it kind of like a working kind of text for the videos, or?
Yeah, I think in a way it was, and I specifically wanted to try and use it as an exercise, like writing with another person, so there's that very literal feedback going on. And the person I was writing it with previously ran a radio frequency called Dead Air Radio, right. And so I thought it was kind of, there was an irony writing with Dead Air, like it could be this name for a person who ran a radio show, it could actually be trying to get feedback, like trying to draw something out of nothing, mm-hmm. and that point between A and B, what is it and how do you expand from in the middle of something that is used for transmission or a point of travel, yeah.
And so then what is, just talk us through what's in Mush Zone, what have you recorded in, because it's a double, is it a double channel, would yes. you call it a double channel?
I think so, I think it's kind of important, the two, yeah, the number two seems to have come up quite a bit. I remember thinking, oh, I'd love it if the weather was really great. And then I went up, the weather was actually not great, but I think that those things that don't really line up always play a part in the work, and it things that you don't plan for actually help it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, I'll just pull off at Maruia and have a look at the waterfall, because it's always quite impressive. And because it had been raining, there was this huge eddy of slash and like tree debris, I suppose. And I thought, gee, that's how strange that it seems to be moving constantly in one area, but you know that so much is passing through, and it was because of the material sitting on top going round and round that you could actually really see it, but you can't see what's passing through, and it kind of was making me think of those lines that the ball markers were sitting on, and that kind of relation of something passing through but seemingly staying the same, like something's always changing, but yeah, and then the ball markers was just took my fancy, I think. Yeah, they're also a marker, like their use is to warn aircraft of something that seemingly is invisible, because it sits in a valley and, you know, there could be a hazard, so they put these funny ball markers on the lines. So again, kind of highlighting something that's seemingly invisible. Yeah.
Cool. Mm. And Luke, because you also contributed to System to System as well, how did you use it? Like, what was...
So my contribution was a visual score to the work I recorded for the Suta, but quite abstract. It wasn't like traditional classical notation, obviously, being it's a noise track, you could say.
Yeah.
So it was a bit more, I hesitate to say poetic, but poetic response to the work.
And that came before or after the recording?
That came after. Yeah. After it had been installed as well.
Yeah.
Which is, again, happened with the Domino show.
Mm-hmm. You could use that to read the work then. Does it become like a didactic help for approaching your work?
I guess it becomes a bit of an aid. I also like the idea that it could be interpreted by someone else, and the work could be recreated somehow through loose interpretation of what's on the score. Mm-hmm. Playing with those ideas, I guess.
Yeah.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
And so, like, what was your approach? You obviously wanted Phoebe and Luke to contribute to System to System. Who else was involved in the creation of the content?
One of the chapters I interviewed Anna 18, who was another one of the artists in the show, and we kind of talked a lot about her work or her writing and her master's exegesis, and we're thinking about, I guess, these kind of connections to objects. Like, a lot of her work thinks about the history of these places or materials, and so I talked to her about a lot of the ideas that she was thinking about. A lot of the rest of the pages were kind of generated mostly out of either research or by myself, out of ideas that I was thinking about in response to the idea.
So the manifesto, which was the first page, can you describe what it was in favour of, or what was it talking about?
There's quite a few ideas that I touched on in there. You definitely have to read it to get the full the full picture, but I've adopted this writing style where I would sit down and just kind of completely implode myself in the writing, and I'll pump it out in maybe an hour or 2 hours, which is quite interesting, because then I just let myself go on tangents as I'm writing, and I'll be quite loose about it. So what ended up happening was quite this Marxist manifesto, where I talked a lot about ways that we engage with spaces, and as part of that I started to think about the idea of controlled spaces, or I was calling them modulated spaces, which is something that has kind of bled over into some of my work in Domino as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea of, if I recall correctly, the manifesto kind of talks about how you would approach the obelisk in the show as well, and what role that has. And I think the installation of all the works in the show is kind of an interesting thing to think about, because we were all like fitting into to slots that were there or were not there when we thought that through. Yeah. How did you find the placing of the work? Did it happen organically and successfully for each of your works?
I guess I was kind of lucky. It wasn't the first thing you saw when you came into the space, but it kind of stood off from the other works, and it was quite intrusive, which is something that I really wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about you, Luke?
I was really stoked with where my work went. There's like a dinky little utility corridor, which links the two, the old and the new space.
Yeah.
I think Sarah told us a story about the shags and the herons would fight for their side of the pond, which is just outside the Suta. And then I was thinking about how the utility corridor kind of embodied the pond, and that's what the two gallery spaces were reflecting. So yeah, I was happy with it. And because Sarah always was talking about how no one ever puts a work in the corridor. It's just used as a pass-through space.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was really happy with it.
Mm-hmm. How about you?
I think it was good because it was just a wall that hadn't had anything else on it.
There was a lot in that show, so
it was busy, but it was busy in a good way. I think the placement made sense in a very kind of physical lead through from, you know, Dan's to Luke's to mine. Like there was that kind of duration of time, but also through space, like going through the different galleries and kind of crossover. And I guess that's how it works.
Yeah. You probably had the hardest job because you came in last, yeah. And things were changing throughout that whole time. So it was tricky to kind of, yeah.
Tricky, but nice to kind of just respond immediately to that and kind of go, okay, well, what's going to work in the current space? And yeah.
And how did that thinking then translate? So Sympathetic Resonance ran from October to February 2019, 2020, and then we started installing. Domino Domino was due to open on the 23rd of March, lockdown circa time, and we started installing the show, but it didn't open until May. But I kind of just wanted to ask you about the spatial transition and the transposition of the spaces onto one another that makes up Domino Domino, because it's quite a specific treatment of the space downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And was curious how you came to that, because this time you had the whole gallery to choose to do whatever you wanted with it rather than responding to other works and things. So how did that happen and what did you do?
Well, we sat down to talk about it and we were kind of saying, oh gee, our work is quite minimal. And I think it started as a joke actually about, oh, how about we close off the space in the narrowest point or somewhere in there. But in doing that, like, yeah, it's a joke, but we then kind of split it into two spaces, like one half that's kind of unseen and behind and another half that's operational in the front. And again, there's like that number two that keeps coming up between two sites, between two spaces, and I think that's kind of, that was our starting point, I suppose.
I think most of the iterations have been about like point to point and then what happens in the middle.
Yes.
I think that's kind of true with all the work, both in Sympathetic Resonance and Domino Domino.
Definitely.
So I think by closing the space off, we've created another point to point kind of like, I don't know what you call it, like a transmission of frequency or something like that. I don't know what the right term is. But yeah, working in that middle grey area, right? Like that's...
Yeah, grey area is a good word for that. Yeah. Yeah, like expanding what's kind of in between.
Yeah, sure.
I think what's interesting, and it came up during the kind of the end of install, was, yeah, what does collaborative practice look like and what does... The show downstairs feels very coherent and unified.
Mm.
And there are obviously decisions that need to be made as a group, which is similar but different to how it played out in Sympathetic Resonance. You kind of talking, but there wasn't a collective work that happened aside from Dan's, I guess, which had included everybody in it.
I guess all the way through that we were always talking about what we were doing. We didn't really seem to be up there without the others knowing about what it was. And like we talked together before the show even started about how we could respond, and we initially talked about that collaborative response. So it kind of made sense that all of the works would gel quite well with each other. I mean, definitely in Domino Domino, there's aspects that kind of shine through from individual artists, but then there's, I think, all of the decisions we kind of made together. We didn't really just make a decision by ourselves.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Tell me then about your arrows, your vinyl interventions into the space, and how they work in regard to, yeah, pointing people towards certain areas or works in the gallery, and how you thought that through.
Yeah, I mean they initially came about through that thinking of controlled spaces. I became really interested in in wayfinding graphics, and especially in art galleries as well, like how you're kind of directed, and you kind of, like, you come into a space and you automatically look for these little arrows that point you to which gallery to go to or which exhibition is where. And so I was quite interested in playing with those a bit more. So some of them are quite, they gesture towards things. They don't specifically point to anything, but some of them actually are pointing to where things could have been. And so throughout the process of coming up with how we were going to lay out this show, we had lots of different ideas for how things could be laid out, or, where people's works would sit. And so I quite liked that I could use these arrows to point at where things were going to go, but we decided not to put them there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. It's been one of the questions that we've been asked a lot by people coming into the gallery is like, how does this arrow gesture? What is this? Where is this? What is the notation on this arrow? It's pointing me at a blank wall or something like that. And I think it's interesting because your work in the printed work in the show as well is a kind of transposition of spaces and movement that could have happened or movement that might have happened as well. So if you could just talk us through the printed work as well, chapter 6. Is it chapter 6?
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, it is chapter 6. That came out, I mean, again, like both the vinyl work and chapter 6 were quite interconnected. I think we're thinking about them at the same time. But that, and the whole thing really came out of the idea of recording, thinking about how to reiterate the work down here. And I like the idea that you can use publishing as a way of recording a exhibition in terms of, like, you could write a script about how to view the exhibition, or it's a script, but it's also, like, it's written after the fact. So I was interested in ways to lay that out and how I could use those arrows to point between pieces of text that speak about things that you would see in the show or maybe wouldn't see in the show. Like, if you're reading it now and you never saw Symphonic Resonance, although it's not going to make any sense, but it still records, like, the way that things worked in that show. And then it also kind of bleeds into the show in Christchurch, so that both of those things are quite connected. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And look, you've also kind of transposed the spaces on one another as well.
Yeah, so I recorded my piece for Domino Domino in the Suda itself, again using the utility corridor as a central point, and then I recorded in the old space, the new space, and then in the foyer as well. So I enacted a loop of recording, effectively making a field, hence the title Ghost Field. Mm-hmm. And then the idea, I suppose, is that I've transposed the Suda gallery onto the physics room. Or, like, how does that work? Yeah, I don't know. Sorry.
Well, I mean, I guess it was never, you recorded it at the Suda, and in a sense, it was performed, and the work had a presence there, but it hasn't got a presence like it does here, which is kind of a durational looped recording.
What do you mean?
I guess it existed up at the Suda.
Right. But I guess it, like, I don't know if it needs to be mentioned, but it was recorded not, like, in this gallery's open hours. Mm-hmm. So how does that, like, I don't know if it does exist at the Suda, you know? Like, I don't know.
I mean, that's a really interesting, I mean, like, that's really interesting to me, that did it exist? It happened after Sympathetic Resonance happened. It happened in closed gallery time.
It happened from in between the point to point, right?
Yeah. And how about Mush Zone 2, Phoebe?
Yeah, 2 again.
Because I think as well, like, this work happens in two locations in the gallery as well. I mean, you're on the operational side of things, viewing the non-operational side of things. If we want, they're really lame labels that don't really do much. I'm sorry.
I was thinking about the ball markers, and I did this drawing of a circle with a line through it over two pages. So it was on the edge of the top page, and then the other half was on the bottom page. And I was lining up the line in the middle and kind of shifting it apart. And it became two lines with the space in between, which was like, oh, how funny that I've been looking at that in my work, like this space between. And I think that's where the parallel apertures came from, And then, you know, of course, it kind of looks like the double slit experiment.
What is the double slit experiment?
Yes, I have notes. It was a demonstration. This is just from a wiki stub. A demonstration that light and matter can display characteristics of both classically defined waves and particles. So I thought that was really interesting. It was first performed by Thomas Young in 1801 as a demonstration of the wave behaviour of light. And I think I thought that that was really fitting, especially in terms of localised work, where we were looking at light and sound and waves and particles, and yes, you've got these two apertures. But when I did this drawing, it kind of looked like the Greek symbol, I don't know if you pronounce it phi or phi, but phi. It's used in lots of as a symbol for lots of different things, but one of the things it's used for is in perceptual psychology, again, wiki stuff. I'm going to call it phi. The phi phenomenon is the apparent motion caused by the successive viewing of stationary objects, such as the frames of a motion picture. And I thought, I'm pretty sure that's that experiment where there's a bunch of pictures of this horse running, and there's one slit, and you move it around in a circle, and it appears to run. And I thought that was especially interesting in terms of the eddy in the Maruia, where it seems kind of like this stationary body, but it's still doing something, like stuff's passing through it. And I think there was something else displacement in physics was... This sounds really scientific. It's not. It just is coincidence, which is another nice thing about making work. Which is the total distance an object travels. So unlike displacement, which is the total distance an object travels from a starting point, the path length is the total distance travelled regardless of where it has travelled. Something might have gone between A and B, which could be really close together, but done this massive detour off somewhere else and only ended up, you know, however far away. So from the viewing wall to the back wall, but there's something going on in the middle that's so much greater. And I thought that limited view kind of spoke to that. Like, yeah, you've got a limited view, but is it really that important that, you know, there's all this panning and kind of the same thing going on all the time. I thought it would be nice to leave some of making up the rest of the image to the viewer.
Mm.
Yeah, I think we're going off track.
No.
It's a bit of displacement.
No.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah.
Mm.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
How would you, I mean, people have kind of come in and said, you know, they're looking through the slits at your work, but you've also got Luke's sound work kind of going on in the background as well. And it almost becomes, I'm hesitant to say it, but like it's perceived as a soundtrack as well.
Totally. I think we were aware of that, and I didn't mind it. Part of having a group show is that, yes, your work is going to get read in the context of others.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that building a context around the work, especially when you're looking at duration and location and feedback and all that, which is what we've been looking at, you know, I don't think you can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like we didn't really talk about it until after it had been installed. I guess we were in the motions of installing it, didn't really...
I think I'd thought about it, but maybe hadn't mentioned it, but I might have mentioned it if I thought it was going to be an issue.
Yeah, right.
I like that, you know, I just like it. I don't know what I was going to say.
Sure. I think I was hesitant to say soundtrack because of the conversation that we had, where we talked about the primacy of vision.
Yeah.
Over audio.
Yeah.
And so... It kind of does this weird hierarchy thing, and that's not how I'm saying it, but I mean, what do you think about that?
I mean, maybe if you asked me like a year ago, I would have cared, but I also think now, like I don't mind that it's read like that, because I think you could also arguably read
Phoebe's work altering my sound work. Like, I think it goes both ways, but we just prioritize vision, right?
I think the funny thing with the vision is that...
But it's also limited anyway,
it's
right?
It's limited, and you have to really make the effort to go and look through this tiny slit. So you're first confronted with the sound, which is kind of... It's all-consuming in that space.
Mm.
And, you know, it's funny in terms of your work that the viewing is quite secondary in terms of that part of it.
Mm.
Yeah.
I guess we've also created a flattening zone. Like both of our works being in the backspace, it's like a mush zone of the two works. Yeah, no, I'm not so worried about it. I like it being together because I think you also read it with Dan's work and how you walk through the space, right? Like it...
Directional.
Yeah. It's directional.
Yeah. Totally.
I mean, I think that's why I like those arrows that point to nothing as well. Like they're really suggestive of like the mush zone, the grey zone, the thing that you can't see, that you can't experience firsthand. The interesting thing is that you've worked with Luke before on Black Forest, which was like a road trip.
Yeah, like an ambiguous road trip, a non-narrative road trip.
Yeah.
In the format it was presented, it's meant to be read as a non-narrative road trip.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was interested in that as well when we were talking about putting the show together, like a maybe not non-narrative way to navigate the gallery, but like...
It's non-linear. There's no specific trajectory of the show.
And that's been so true, given the context that we're working in, you know, like a kind of post-COVID world where... There were a couple of tweaks on both Phoebe's work and your work, Dan, in terms of the kiosk was meant to be like the kiosk here that you've built and designed, a very public thing, which we've had to kind of just pull back a little bit from to ensure that public safety and public health are kind of priorities. And so it sits within the gallery, but it's on wheels, so it gestures towards the possibility of movement as well.
Yeah, that's been interesting because in thinking about how to present the work down here, I redesigned the kiosk and I really kind of leant more into the idea of a traditional kiosk as a space for information. So it's actually, it's painted a specific shade of green, which is to match the street furniture down through the Cathedral Square, which is also a similar green to what's used in newspaper kiosks through Paris and London and most of Europe. And yeah, the wheels definitely imply like it was supposed to be outside initially. But then once we set it inside, it still works in a different way, but in a quite a good way. It was supposed to have more pages on there at one time. But at the moment, it's just got one page on, which I think is interesting because it means that people may not want to take them.
And I think kind of just thinking back to other tweaks that we've made in terms of we were thinking about your... Do you want to talk about that? You don't have to.
No, totally. We can talk about that.
What would you call it? A listening aperture or a listening slot? Or what? How would you want to describe it?
I was going to say it's like a physical acknowledgement, my work in the space or something. I don't know. Because I guess it was a hotly contested debate with Nathan Pohio on the night before the show opened and a few beers in. So it was very academic and very intelligent. But so obviously the wall was there and I had, but you know, with the whole lockdown situation and been afforded some time to ponder the work and how it was going to kind of come together. I had originally planned on having quite a large hole cut up high so you couldn't see in. But when I saw how nicely Max cut the viewing apertures for Phoebe, I felt that a large hole up high would have been a bit cumbersome. So I was gonna, until like what, 8:30 at night, gonna have no acknowledgement of my work other than the wall, right? But then Nathan came in and made a lot of sense and convinced me that it was a good idea to have the second listening aperture, I suppose. But I think again it positions my work... Well, we talked about this on our way home that night, about it like becoming a show of drawings or like in the most expanded sense that like Phoebe had drawn these holes in the wall, Dan had drawn quite literally on the floor, and then this was another drawing of sound
It's interesting to me because there's a speaker right. I mean, you don't know this, but there's a speaker right behind that drawing as well.
Yeah, totally. And I guess the size of it is kind of based off that speaker.
Yeah.
I guess it also has a practical means. If the hole isn't there, the work had to be quite loud, which affected the rest of the building. But I mean, I'd love to work in those conditions. I get that not everyone wants to listen to me droning on for multiple hours in a day.
It's been interesting. Like Michelle's been spending more time in the gallery than me, but I think you can actually hear it more up here. I think it actually travels
really
through and up.
That's interesting.
Rather than
that's interesting. I'm really keen to get like or talk about or get a response to what it's like to actually spend a lot of time with a work like that. And I mean, maybe that's for my own personal research.
Mm.
Audrey, who works in the gallery on the weekend, says that she finds it quite meditative. She quite enjoys it.
That's good. That's right where I want to be.
It'd be nice to talk about the title, Domino Domino. How did you guys come up with it?
Two. I was thinking about sympathetic resonance, right? And I was thinking about dominoes. Knocking Knock dominoes and the knocking on from a sympathetic resonance and
feedback
and what that effect has.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could have just called it domino, but domino, double down on it. Double down, domino.
We came up with quite a few different things, but really throughout the whole process of coming up with the title, the idea of repetition kept coming up.
Yeah.
I'm still a big fan of Homecoming, which is the original title. It's really
call Kanye West up.
It's really like triumphant, you know.
A return,
a slight return.
Great, thanks everybody. Thank you for all your work over the last 9 months. Domino runs until the 5th of July, and there will be a number of public programs happening in the meantime. So hopefully see you all in the gallery at some point. Thanks so much.
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Signtech, Resine Paints, and the Crater Rim.